Welcome to the jungle. We start hour number three. It's a three-hour program, and it is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Been a really good show already. We had Bob Costas last hour. I had the new athletic director at UCLA, Martin Jarman, in hour number one. We start hour number three, as promised, by having a conversation with the driver of the number nine car for Hendrick Motorsports. He is entering his fifth full-time Cup Series season, two-time most popular driver, six-time Cup Series winner, three top five finishes this season. He's qualified for the NASCAR playoffs in each of his first four full-time Cup seasons and is unveiling a new Kelley Blue Book paint scheme for tomorrow night's race in Charlotte. We are going to get into all of that. My guest is Chase Elliott. Chase, I want to get into the paint scheme in just a minute, but before we do that or anything else, how are you and everybody around you doing during this pandemic, Chase?
Yeah, doing all right. Appreciate you asking. Hope everybody's good on your end, and thanks for asking.
Yeah, you got it. They are. Thank you for asking as well, and it's good to have you back. So you're coming off this race on Sunday where you ran really well to the point where you had a nearly two-second lead with three laps to go. Then the 24, Chase cuts a tire, and the caution flag comes out. What was going through your mind at that point?
Unfortunate. Thought we had had a real good shot at it there prior to that caution coming out, when a caution comes out late in a race like that, ultimately you're just put in a position. It's kind of a lose spot. People around you or people behind you are always going to do the opposite of whatever the leader does or the people in front of them to try to gain, try to get the lead. So, if you stay out in that situation, I'm sure a lot of people pit. If you pit, I'm sure a lot of people are going to stay out. So it just, it's a tough place to be in, and unfortunately it didn't work out.
Man, I was going to go there next. Exactly right. So the decision was to pit with the belief that other cars would follow, hopefully, but they did not. Then on the restart, you had to battle your way back to third. Ultimately, you finished second. I know that that's how these things go, but that doesn't make it any less frustrating. How frustrating and challenging was that then?
Yeah, it was a tough one for sure. I mean, especially being a Coke 600 that's a big-time race for us and in the NASCAR world. It means a lot, and to the people who have won that race, that is a pretty pretty elite group. And that's just one of those races that you'd love to end your career and say you won. So hopefully one day we'll have another shot at it.
Chase Elliott joining us. One more thought about that. That's coming on the heels of that race four nights earlier at Darlington where you had a shot to win and then Kyle Busch clipped you from behind. I don't know. I mean, Chase, you've been around this game your entire life. You know how these things go. It's a part of the sport. At the same time, as you look back the last 2 weeks, is there any part of you that wants to say, come on, can you give me a break here?
I mean, yeah, the last 2 weeks have been really tough. I feel like we've put ourselves in really good positions as a team and good position. We've made good decisions and we've made good adjustments on the cars throughout these races. And those are things that you don't always get right. I think that's what's frustrating for me is it's a hard thing to make all the right moves and the right decisions and get the car driving exactly like you want it. And when you have those days and those type of runs and those type of cars, you want to make the most of it. And I think that's where the frustration is the worst for me is just knowing that stuff isn't forever. It's not something you get right all the time. And we've had two opportunities to get away. So I think that's the hard thing to swallow is just knowing that. But the silver lining in is we've been running well and that's encouraging. We just got to keep doing it. And it's still early in the season.
Chase Elliott's joining us. And I guess also it's good that you get to run back quickly. But then that doesn't give you much time. I mean, the whole thing is just so unusual, Chase. But how do you go about preparing to run it back again tomorrow night in Charlotte?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've really enjoyed the racing, the midweek racing. I've enjoyed the lack of practice. I've enjoyed the challenge that brings. And frankly, I think we've you know, over time just migrated to these schedules that are just way too drawn out. And I think we're learning as a group, and I think NASCAR's learning as a sanctioning body that we don't have to practice for 2 days to lead up to an event. I think we can put on a great show, much like we're doing right now, and potentially do more of it. So I think I really think NASCAR has been in a unique situation to be able to make some changes with all this and learn, and I think we're learning a lot right now as a group. So hopefully we can apply some of this stuff down the road.
We're talking to Chase Elliott, and we'll do so for a few more moments. In the meantime, you are running the truck race tonight, and there is a bounty on Kyle Busch. The bounty has been modified with $50,000 going to COVID-19 relief in the name of the driver who beats him. For those who don't know, how did that bounty first come to be, and how much are you looking forward to getting out there tonight?
Yeah, so the whole thing really was Kevin Harvick's idea, and it was kind of something he was messing around with on Twitter, and it gained a lot of traction and a lot of interest. Originally, I was supposed to run, you know, Atlanta the weekend that our season got shut down, and you know that obviously didn't work out. But you know, Kevin and I talked a little bit the other day, and you know, we just felt like the smart thing was to try to put that money towards something good if we were to go out there and beat Kyle and earn it. And I think that's the right thing. You know, this is a much larger deal going on than him handing out $50,000 to anybody who beats him. You know, I think we can do some good with it, and I think that's why it changed to what it is, and I'm supportive of it.
Chase, I'm really curious. Like, you and I have talked about this in the past, and I mentioned it earlier, but it's a part of your family racing. It's a part of your life. Knowing that, what's it been like going the last couple of months without racing?
Yeah, it's been odd. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, I don't know that I've, you know, in the last, you know, I'm only 24, but heck, I've been, you know, racing a lot, you know, really for the past 10 or 11 years, and I don't know that I've had that many consecutive days at home or in one state in over 10 years. And like my dad, you know, talking to him about that, he's much the same, except it's more like 30 or 40 years worth, you know, so it's been different for sure. I tried to cherish my time at home and enjoy that because it's something that we don't typically get. So you try to find the good in some of that stuff and make the most of it. But it's definitely odd for sure. Our off season isn't that long, and even through our off season, we're still busy doing things. So it was a change of pace.
Chase Elliott joining us. I'm still shaking my head, and I always do when I remember that you are just 24. And I say that because I've always been so impressed with the way you approach your job, not just as a driver, but as a teammate, as a partner in business, and so much more. I mean, there's so much more to being a driver that people never, ever see. So how do you get the right balance off the track?
Yeah, you know, you just try to, you know, put things that are what's important to you in the right order, you know, and I think the number one thing is just realizing, especially in the NASCAR world, with as many partners and people that we deal with and talk to every day, you're never going to make everybody happy. So you just need to go ahead and understand that going into it, that somebody's always going to be mad, somebody's not going to get their way, and you just can't let that affect you know, your job or your performance on track. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just understanding that and just trying to do the best you can to find balance for everybody, but also accept that it's not always going to be perfect for everyone involved.
Chase Elliott, my guest. All right, so you're working with Kelley Blue Book and the new paint scheme. Can you lay that out for us? How did that come to be?
Yeah, Kelley Blue Book has been a partner of mine ever since I got the Cup. So we've been working together for a number of years now, and they always do a new paint scheme every year. So this is their first race of the season, so get to unveil it tomorrow night. And car looks good, always has it. They typically have really good looking cars, so looking forward to getting their colors on track.
It's another big week. He is the driver of the number 9 car for Hendrick Motorsports, entering his fifth full-time Cup Series season and already a 2-time most popular driver. Chase, appreciate you very much. Great to have you back. Good luck this week, and always good to talk to you.
You bet. Yeah, thanks. Y'all have a good day.
Have a great day, Chase. Extremely popular driver, Chase Elliott. All right, there are your three interviews. Martin Jarman, Bob Costas, Chase Elliott. We're doing our thing. Having a great time. I am still in my L.A. Southern California-based studios. Bill Ryder was in here Friday and Monday. Did an excellent job, as always. Bill, good job, my man. Appreciate you picking me up and looking out and handling things here. Ritt moved into the EP chair. Held it down for a bit.
Finally.
You did not just say that, old man. Remember when I had him on the air that day and he hit me with, finally. I just said he moved into the EP chair. Finally. Sorry that took so long.
Game on.
He's already booked this week's podcast and next week's podcast and was up in my grill during the break for another guest after that. Take it easy, old man. Finally. All right, 1-800-636-8686. It is Smack-Off season. To the victor, go the spoils. $5,000. Adam, let me borrow you really quickly. All right, so we ran our first video from a clone regarding the Smack-Off. As I mentioned, it was a shirtless Narc bra in his hot tub, representing as only Narc bra can, and we bumped that in. If anybody else wants to get the same thing or has an interest in having a video that we bump in on CBS Sports Network, Adam, what do they have to do?
Email us, smackoffvideos@gmail.com. We've had dozens and dozens, hundreds really, of submissions over the long holiday weekend, which is great to see. Basically, you record a 15 to 20 second kind of hype video, pick who you think's going to win or call your shot on who you think's going to flame out or who you would like to see have a good showing or terrible showing. Send those videos to smackoffvideos@gmail.com. Keep them 15 to 20 seconds long. Please don't play any music in the background because we have to pay for that music and we're not going to. So your video just goes straight into the trash can. Keep it, let's call it PG-13. I mean, you can get loose, but no booze, no nudity. Yeah, no nudity, please. Send those videos in and you get some TV airtime in the bump backs and bump outs from here up until the Smack Off. So you've got 24 more days to do this and get on TV.
Generally, how have they looked to you?
Really good.
The ones you've seen.
Really good. People love this event. They love predicting and calling their shots, and they love themselves.
And not in that order.
Right. Yeah, they're narcissists. So this is the best of everything. You get on TV, you get to talk about the Smack Off, and see yourself and tell all your friends. Silk was just on. He was our debut video. Right. He deserves it for how much content he's provided the jungle lately. So Silk in the hot tub was our first bump back. And
shirtless Narc bra in the hot tub. Bra. Clarification.
Correct. And yeah, if you want to be a part of it, Smack
Off
Videos at
Gmail. In market. Shirtless Narc bra in a hot tub.
No one called the cops on him either. So that must have been nice, Silk, to not have the cops called on you while you were enjoying yourself.
Yeah, but he wasn't breaking the law though, right?
Or the volleyball players breaking the law.
Apparently. Silk said so. He narked them out.
But yes, we love these submissions. Don't sit on it. Don't wait. The clock is ticking. There are already a lot of people in line. So if you want to get in line, you know, obviously the best stuff is going to get on. So you could jump people by having an awesome video. But send those in now, please. Oh, Carl Anderson's dad submitted a video. Yes.
I love it.
And he called his shot. And The good father is in, yes.
Who does the good father like?
Rick and Buffalo.
Okay.
Yes.
You're going to put that in. That's going to make it air, right?
That's going to be on before the end of the week, guaranteed.
That should be on before the end of the hour.
And it might be on heavy rotation. We might see that more than once.
Oh, no, the good father's getting in. If I have anything to say about what happens on the Jim Rome radio program, the good father's getting his run.
No doubt.
That's happening for sure. Really quickly, so what did you do this weekend? You had the 2 days off. What did you get into?
I went to Torrey Pines after work on Thursday.
Oh.
That was fun. Then I threw a lot of my time back into the family, which was great.
You went Thursday after the show.
Thursday after the show. Quick jaunt down to La Jolla, played Torrey Pines.
You didn't get 18 in, did you?
I got 18 in. Could have got 36. We were flying.
How'd that go for you?
Oh, it was great. It was really cool. It's an interesting time to be alive.
Did you social distance while you were out there?
Yes, we got our temperatures taken arriving at the golf course. We had to wear masks to the starter, and then they let us out. We were all in our own carts, socially distancing, and we had a good time.
How'd you play?
I played great. Actually, for me, I shot a 92, which, you know, it's good for me, not great for everyone else, but it's hard to have a really, you know, anything less than a stellar time on that property. It's an unbelievable piece of real estate.
Was that your first time playing that course?
Second time playing Torrey Pines North.
You didn't spend the night down there, did you?
No, I wish. The lodge is closed right now. That would have been great. I got home just in time to hang out with the fam, pass out, and
I'm sure the wife was very happy with that act.
That's a long day.
It's for you. For her.
You wake up, do the show, drive to Torrey,
drive
back.
I got home just in time to hang out and pass out.
Yes.
How long did you hang out before you passed out?
2 seconds.
What time did you get home?
I got home at 9:30.
Damn, dude. That's a quick turn.
It was really quick. And considering how early you and I wake up for this show, I mean, it just caught up with me. I was falling asleep on the drive home, honestly.
Yeah, really? How many beers did you have?
No comment.
Okay.
But I was sober when I drove. I want to point that out.
Uh-huh. That is pretty amazing, though. I know where you live. I know where we work. That you got down to Torrey and back and played 18, and you made it home by 9-ish?
And that includes a pit stop at In-N-Out on the way home with the fellas, too.
How'd that go?
That was great. That was a classic California moment where you go and get your order and you eat in the parking lot because you got no other choice. You're eating on the hood of a car. You just played some golf. Yeah, it was a classic California moment, and then I drove home and passed out.
Did you go animal style? What'd you get?
I went double-double animal style, absolutely, and a little chocolate shake as a chaser for the ride home. What are you going to do?
Hey, look at me. I'm not going to eat that bun. I will have that shake, but I'm not going to eat the bun. Look at me. I'm responsible. I'm wrapping that thing with lettuce. Give me that shake. I'm not in any way judging. I'd go shake, too. If you're going to make that In-N-Out run, you better get a shake. But why not just get the bun if you're going to get the shake?
Well, I don't mean to point out an error. I did get an animal style, not protein style. Protein style is the lettuce wrap.
Yeah. My bad.
Oh, I had the bun. I had the carbs. I had the shake. If you're going In-N-Out, they make their shakes with real ice cream, so it's an impossible shake to pass up. They do it so much better than everybody else.
I don't know. I don't want to correct you just because you corrected me, but I did work there when I was 16, and I know how that shake works, at least how it worked back in the day. You dump that thing into the machine. If you get it early, it's good, but when the shake mix runs out and you're getting what's left, it is not good. It's not really a shake at that point.
It's just liquid.
It's just milk. It's just residue. It's like you're scraping the pan. I don't know. It's a good shake if you hit it right.
I think we got it at the right time. They may have just topped off. But it was a great weekend. I hope you had a great weekend as well.
No, you don't. You don't even care.
Oh, I do. How was your weekend?
It was good. Thanks for asking. It was all good. All right. Appreciate that. So what I did, in fact, I can get into that. What I did over the weekend. The 4 days went fast. A lot of good stuff, though. A lot of quality time with the fam. A lot of quality time in the backyard. If there's been a silver lining, it's that I've gotten into my backyard. You got to use your backyard, right? No, I have not played any bocce ball. I haven't gone there yet, but it's been nice just to kind of kick it in the backyard, get some family time, little happy hour in the backyard. It's been fun. All right, when we come back, thank you, Adam Hawk. Must be nice, damn, man. He's got a piece of a clothing company. He plays Tory. Damn, Hawk, you have come up in this world.
What?
You have come up in this world, son. That's amazing. How long before you're a member at Augusta? Augusta National, newest member, Adam Hawk. You playing Pebble this beach? Riv, both. Damn, Hawk. Playing Tory. When we return, lots to get to. Open phones. Did you check out that Lance Armstrong doc last night? Do you like him more or even less after seeing that? All of that's coming up. Welcome back. All right, so if you're on hold, stay there. There's a really good chance that if you're on hold, you're going to get on the air. Next segment. Do not hang up. But I want to talk about the Lance Armstrong doc, because even though The Last Dance is over, it does not mean that you can't spend your Sunday night watching a documentary about an a-hole. Because Lance is here. Lance, the two-part series on Lance Armstrong debuted on Sunday night, and man, that thing got off to a riveting start, didn't it?
When my life took the turn that it took, I said to myself, everywhere that I go for the rest of my life, somebody is going to walk up to me and say, "F you." And so a couple days go by and nobody said, "F you." And then months go by and years go by, and I'm like, I always know when somebody wants to say, "F you." But nobody does. Nobody ever does. So it took 5 years. I was staying in this rental house, calling Uber, He pulls up on the other side of the street, right in front of the bar. We cross the street, and this guy stands up, and he says, "Hey, Lance." And I'm like, "What's up, man?" And he goes, F*** you. And the next thing you know, he's with like six or seven people. They all stand up and start going, F*** you, cheater.
Pretty fascinating story, right? Well, it's not the story that's fascinating, but the way he starts the story that's fascinating. Quote, "When my life took the turn that it took." That kind of set the entire tone, didn't it? "When my life took the turn that it took." Check out the passive voice on that one. I love how he's referring to being a cheater and an international disgrace as a, quote, turn that his life just happened to take. Like he was just a passenger and had absolutely nothing to do with it. Like he was just out on a bike ride and suddenly the bike by itself veered in a different direction and he had no way of changing that. It's an interesting insight into how he views life because despite the fact that he says he always asked about what drugs he was taking, he always knew what drugs he was taking and always made the decision to take them on his own. You know, there was none of that "I've never knowingly," well, after he denied it for years. But in the end, "I knew what I was doing. I knew what I was taking. I made that decision." There's that, but he still likes to portray himself as the victim and he's still pissed. And he says at one point, "Some people just can't chill the bleep out." Lance Armstrong said that about others. "Some people can't chill the bleep out." Dude, that's you. You're the one who can't chill the bleep out. The rest of us have all moved on. And that's the other weird thing about that documentary. It's not new. There's not a lot of news that's there that we didn't already know. There's not a lot of information there that we didn't already know. What's new about that? I mean, there is a lot of time spent on his childhood, his mom, his stepfather, Terry Armstrong, who seems like a real piece of work, to the point that Lance thought about changing his name back to his birth father's last name.
I would always think about changing my name back to, I guess, my biological name, but I never even began to start that process, so it couldn't have been that serious. And then when at some point, it's too late, you know, because by the age of 15, you know, I was already establishing myself and my career and a brand or whatever that means. And so then it was too late. Plus, it's a good name. I like the name. Lance Armstrong. I think that's a good name. It's better than Lance Gunderson. That's a kind of a weird name.
It's kind of an interesting detail, sort of. Except I'm not really sure why it exists now. Kind of like the whole documentary as a whole. Like, what's the point? Is it just a recap of Lance's life and his career? Because we already know a lot about that. We know how he was an amazing cyclist early in his career, then plateaued, then was diagnosed with testicular cancer, which spread to his brain, and then he came back to win seven straight Tour de France titles. It's one of the most amazing stories of all time. Or it was, until it was confirmed that he had been cheating. And that he was not the man at the center of the most amazing and inspiring story of all time. He was, to quote USADA, a, quote, serial cheater who led, quote, the most sophisticated, professionalized, and successful doping program the sport has ever seen, end quote. And he doesn't really seem to have changed all that much since then. So again, the question, why are we doing a documentary about him right now? And why this documentary? As an example, it doesn't feature Jeff Nowitzki. He was the one who played a major role in bringing down Lance. He told Greg Rosenstein he would not participate in the documentary, quote, "not interested if Lance is playing a role in it," end quote. That makes sense, because given Lance's history, you might think that this is some sort of image rehab project for Lance. Again, why are they doing this? Why now? It's got to be an image rehab project, right? Well, if that's what he was hoping for, that's failing horribly. It's hard to come away from watching that doc and having some great sense of sympathy for Lance. He's just not coming off as a really likable guy. In fact, it's quite the opposite. He does not come across like a guy who's sorry for what he did He's coming off like somebody, of course, who's sorry he got caught. And sorry that the rest of us just don't get it. Like, he's pissed that you're pissed at him for cheating. And the weird thing is, I'm not even sure how many people are still pissed at him. I don't know how many people are still thinking about him and talking about him. Like, everybody moved on, right? He's had numerous times to come clean and truly own what he did and the people he let down, but he's either not really interested in doing that, or he can't, or he just won't. Just when you think there's a chance that he might own it, just when you think he might be aware of the damage that he's done because so many people believed in him and his story, then he turns around and he does this.
The last 5 years has really caused me to, you know, pause and try to understand not just myself, but what this story meant to other people, what this story meant to the world, right? And, you know, that's a heavy thing to think about. I never knew the story was as big as it was. I knew it was big, but I didn't know it was that big. If I was competing today, I could tell you who my peers would be, right? My peers would be Michael Phelps, LeBron James. And so I see where they are. And so only now do I realize, okay, that's where you were. That's where I was.
Like, wait, what? Like, I thought he was going to go there. I thought he was going to get to that point where he did own it. But then he mentions Michael Phelps. He pivots. Michael Phelps, LeBron James. Like, are you kidding me? The difference between you and them is that they aren't, quote, serial cheaters. To the best of our knowledge, they aren't running incredibly sophisticated doping programs. And how about him saying that if he had stayed at that level, it would not have been good for his family? My man, the reason you're not at that level and held in that regard has got nothing to do with your family. It's all about you and your cheating. If you didn't cheat, if you did everything you did cleanly, you would still be that legend today because you were an inspiration to millions. Like, the story he told was of a guy who beat cancer and then beat everybody in the toughest, most grueling sport ever. And he did it clean and he did it the right way. That was the story that we all bought, most of us. That was the story that raised millions and millions of dollars for cancer, for research and awareness. That was the story that inspired millions of people in their battles. Except it wasn't true. He didn't do it clean. He didn't do it the right way. And it doesn't matter that every other rider was on something either, because those who support him will come in and say that. Yeah, well, everybody else was. Maybe. But Lance was the one telling everybody that he was not on anything other than his bike. Remember this spot?
This is my body. And I can do whatever I want to it. I can push it, study it, tweak it, listen to it. Everybody wants to know what I'm on. What am I on? I'm on my bike, busting my ass 6 hours a day. What are you on?
Is that incredible when you think back on that, given what he was doing? I mean, he was telling you that he was doing it clean. He said it point blank. He was telling you he was on his bike 6 hours a day, busting his ass. Yet was doping like crazy. And by the way, this is something. How about this part of the story? Did the doping play a role in his cancer diagnosis?
Do you think you got cancer because of the doping?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. And I don't want to say no because I don't think that's right either. I don't know if it's yes or no, but I certainly wouldn't say no. The only thing I will tell you is the only time in my life that I ever did growth hormone was the 1996 season. And so just in my head, I'm like, growth, like growing hormones and cells, like if anything good needs to be grown, it does. But wouldn't it make also sense that if anything bad is there, that it too would grow?
Blurted out. Remember that time that Chael Sonnen just blurted it out? Lance Armstrong gave himself cancer. And man, we were all like, dude, you didn't really just say that, did you? And then you hear Lance in that doc saying, I don't know, maybe. Then there's the question of whether or not it was hard to go back to EPO.
After you faced death, was it hard to take EPO?
You mean the decision? Because it took, we did EPO before and then obviously did it after. No. No. No.
Does that sound like somebody who's overly bothered by his cheating? I would say no. 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 You know, it brings up an aspect that's always tricky because so many of us, myself included, bought in, right? When you look back now, it's so obvious that he was cheating. He was competing in a sport where almost everybody, I don't know exactly what the number is, but there was prevalent cheating, lots of cheating, and guys are doping and cheating out their asses. And yet he comes back from death to not just compete, but to dominate year in and year out for seven straight years. I mean, of course, it's very easy to say right now, of course he was cheating. It's absurd to think that somebody could come back and beat cancer and beat death and not only make it back on the bike, but to get to the very top of the sport when so many people were cheating. Of course. What were you thinking? Why didn't you know that? Easy to say now, but at that time, there was no proof. There was no proof. He was not failing tests. And when he did, the sport was covering for him by saying the cortisone in his sample was because of a cream that he used for saddle sores. So they made that go away. So it would have been irresponsible for me or anybody else without the facts or the benefit of a test to call him a cheater and not have the proof. We didn't know because he wasn't failing tests. So you can't come right out and scream, cheater, cheater, this guy's a cheater. So that said, I'm not exactly sure what the documentary is trying to say. And there isn't another half. That was just the first part. I'm not sure what they're trying to say or why it exists. But if it's an image rehab attempt, it's not working. If it's an exploration of tricky issues, that's really not working either. If it's a conversation about his legacy and whether the lying, cheating, bullying, deception, and total fraud erases the good that he did, and this is a really good question, right? All the good that he did, all the money that he raised, all the hope that he gave people, is that erased by the lie? You know, that's up for you to answer, but it hasn't really addressed that yet either. So, as I go to break, he has raised millions for cancer research. He has inspired millions. That is true. But again, what made that story so inspirational was the thought that he was doing it on the bike and that he was doing it clean. And he wasn't. And if you accused him of otherwise, he went at you hard. Hard. What are your thoughts on that when we come back? Makov 26 is in 24 days, and that does not mean 24 shows. So you're already running out of time. Which means I think I'll use the last part of the program, take a few telephone calls, see where it gets us. 1-800-636-8686. Let's go to Orange County here in SoCal. Ben in Orange County. Good to have you, Ben. How are you?
Doing great, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a lifelong cyclist. I'm 2 years younger than Lance. Not as talented by any stretch of the imagination, but I have raced at a high level as a triathlete and as a cyclist. And it's really hard to know how and what to do with the Lance effect. You know, when the Oprah interview and Tyler Hamilton's book came out, that was traumatic for me. It was really hard to know what to do with that information. And it soured me on the sport for quite some time. I'm thankful to people who had the strength like David Walsh, Emma O'Reilly, Betsy Andreo to continue to stay strong with their message and what they knew about Lance. And I'm thankful that this, you know, has transpired in the way that it has so that we have the knowledge that we do of what was going on at that time. I suppose, you know, you posed so many great questions and this documentary is, I mean, just goes to just show how complex the Lance story is and really what do we do with it? You know, do we give him some bleeping credit for excelling at the nature of a sport that was already corrupt, already had so many champions fall and aspiring champions get caught and things like that. And this is still occurring. It probably will continue for quite some time. My hope is that we can learn from this and that we can put Lance behind us. And probably the best way to do that is to understand his story and him and what goes into it, and hopefully not repeat those mistakes and promote clean sport, and you know, operate in a level of ethics, which I know sounds idealistic, but it's, as long as money's involved, and a lot of money, you know, there's going to be the potential for things like this to happen again. But I hope that the people who enjoy endurance sports, such as myself, you know, and find them to be beautiful pursuits, full of challenges and challenge and adventure, that we don't lose that love because of a few bad apples, such as Lance, and that we can not have our sport tarnished, and we can carry that legacy forward.
I think that's really well said, Ben. I appreciate you, and I appreciate your thoughts. That elevated the conversation for me. I mean, that's somebody who's in the sport, who looked up to Lance, who's conflicted. And I can remember, you know, in full transparency, right? If you know this show and you know me and you go way back, I did countless interviews with Lance Armstrong. Countless interviews. Great interviews. He was an extremely compelling interview subject. The kind of guy that if he came on, I could ask him a direct question. And I can't tell you how many times during that time I asked him if he cheated. And he never blinked and always denied it. And we had really direct conversations. And I loved having him on. And I was one of those people who also thought it was an amazing story. And how do you not get caught up in that story? When, again, logic would dictate, if it's a dirty, filthy sport, and we knew that it was, because before he won that first tour, it was bathed in controversy. We knew it was a dirty sport. So in what logical mind would think that somebody who nearly died could come back to that sport and not win one, but win seven and dominate? In what world could that happen? But it was such an amazing story. And in the absence of positive tests and in the absence of being able to prove otherwise, you know, you believe in the story. You believe in the guy. Here's my thing also about Lance. If he wanted to cheat in a sport full of cheaters, I kind of understand that. Remember his whole point about, I was wearing that rainbow jersey. I was the best. And I was getting my ass kicked. And I wore it for a year. And I got my ass kicked every single day because he wasn't using. And it was a dirty sport. And he knew he couldn't compete, so he made a decision. Like, I get that. I understand that. I'm not even here to judge that. But he was adamant in telling absolutely everybody that he was clean. That, to me, is the issue. Not that he cheated, because there was a lot of cheating. It was rampant in that sport. But he made damn sure that you knew that he was clean. He was not one of them. He was better than them, and he did it clean. And you heard that commercial. What am I on? I'm on my bike 6 hours a day. Busting my ass.
What am I on?
I'm on performance-enhancing drugs.
What are you on?
Thanks, Alvin. I mean, yeah, yes, he put in the time. Yes, he put in the work. Yes, he put in that time on the bike. But he was doing those things prior, and he wasn't winning, and it wasn't enough. So the story was not just he was a great cyclist. It was that he was a clean cyclist. And by the way, made a hell of a lot of money off that story, and the story wasn't true. And then where does that leave us right now? Like, why are they doing this right now? I don't know. I don't see anything really new. And he certainly hasn't really changed. He doesn't seem that sorry about it. The story was a lie. It seems like he's still having a hard time acknowledging that the whole thing was a lie. Like, does he know it was a lie? He knows he lied. But there doesn't seem to be a ton of contrition. It seems like he's pissed that we're pissed, but we're no longer pissed. We all moved on. So why are we doing this now? I don't really know. Maybe the second half of that doc will shine a light on that. I'm not really sure why they're doing that now.
right? My peers would be Michael Phelps, LeBron James.
Yeah, I don't know. And he makes it sound like, yeah, but it wasn't worth it because of my family. Is that why you stopped? Or is it because of the scandal? Is that the reason you stopped? You know, and then so what's it come down to? What about all the cancer research and awareness? I mean, he raised all that money. He did. He did. His book to me, when I read that book, I thought it was amazing. I'll own that too. But it was a lie. We can pick that topic up tomorrow, certainly. My thanks to Martin Jarman, Bob Costas, Chase Elliott, you clones, the XR4TI. Have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully I can move a golden ticket or two out, and I'm sure we'll have a lot of reaction to today's program then. See ya. We're out.